Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sparkle On with Davey Jags. Today, I am so excited to have Rosalyn McLarty, who is founder and personal coach at Within. Within is all about healing, which, as you know from listening to Sparkle, Sparkle is about healing. It's your happiness, passion, and self-worth. You might know Rosalyn's previous work by when she co-founded The Gist, a woman-run digital media sports brand. It's a mostly women-led team. It's a multi-million dollar company. But Rosalyn went through chronic burnout, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. As you know, she was on her founding journey, what really burnout means to her and how she bounced back from that. So welcome to the show.
For having me.
Yeah, so I want to start at the beginning of your career. So what gave you the idea to start The Gist? I love The Gist, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It honestly really came about organically. Mm-hmm. I started the business with two of my good friends from school. We were all working in different areas of corporate in Toronto and just really kind of noticed from like a personal problems and like needs space, the need for more women-centric sports. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, grew up playing sports and were interested in being a part of the sports that community could provide, but just weren't really resonating with, you know, the ESPNs and the Fox Sports and the Barstools, obviously, of the world, because it didn't feel like a place for women.
Right.
And we're also just like very aware of the inequality in the industry from what was being played on TV, like women's versus men's sports, who was reporting and creating the content around sports and who ultimately it was targeted at. It was just very male dominated from all angles. And so we were like, if this is a problem for us, it must be for so many other women and other underrepresented sports fans. And it honestly felt like just a really big business idea. And it has been.
Yeah.
And so we decided to start it as a side hustle, and then a year later went full-time on it.
Yeah. Can you kind of describe that moment where you felt like it was something even bigger than, like, your own passion, right, your own personal passion, what that feels like?
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember a pretty distinct moment when I realized, like, we really have something here. Mm-hmm. It was when we had our initial launch party. So we'd been working on the company for about 6 months and, you know, experimenting with content and getting feedback. And we decided we were going to have a party to officially launch it. Mm-hmm. And invited like 300 of our friends and colleagues and just like people around the city, and did like a PowerPoint slide presentation on like what the Gist was and why we were doing it. And I remember like coming home after the party, just like reflecting on the feedback that we had gotten and the energy around it and just like the buy-in. And I was like, okay, I think we really have an idea here that is going to be big.
And so then when you went after fundraising, you know, that is a super big challenge. You know, women who go after fundraising are only getting like 2% of VC funding. Mm-hmm. It's an insane stat. I even just talked about it on a recent episode. And what was that like? And how did you, you know, stick to your mission and your integrity during that time?
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly was a journey. And mm-hmm. I think not unlike probably a lot of female founders, the initial interest and traction for fundraising for us was not super positive. Obviously, it's a lot of men in the industry that maybe fully didn't understand or like buy into kind of the pain of the problem that we were going after, or understand how big of an opportunity it really was given that pain. And so, yeah, our initial efforts resulted in a lot of no's, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so we had to get pretty scrappy about where we were getting funding from. Mm-hmm. So we did multiple incubators and accelerators. Mm-hmm. We raised our first kind of official round from angel investors, you know, friends and family, old colleagues and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a lot of traction at the time, like maybe a few thousand people on the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And so they really were people that just like believed in us as a team, mm-hmm. believed in the vision that we were selling, and that we would be able to do it. And then with that, we were, you know, we really had to be resourceful with how we spent that and being strategic about our growth, both from an audience standpoint and then from a dollar standpoint, mm-hmm. if we were going to be able to, you know, raise on that traction. And so I think when we were at a point where we were consistently bringing money in through brand partnerships and all the numbers were going up and to the right, that's when we were finally able to raise like an official seed round. Mm. And yeah, to your question about like staying in integrity, most of it was not venture capital funding. Most of it was angels, kind of strategic funds, strategic mm-hmm. partners, took on some debt, lots of grants, mm-hmm. incubators and accelerators. Really the only VC funding we did take was through an accelerator that was also through Billie Jean King's company. So it felt very aligned.
Yeah.
And I think that allowed us to not feel like we had to have the pressure of running our company in a certain way. It did allow us to stay pretty in integrity with our mission and vision and values and the culture that we wanted to build. And mm-hmm. So as much as it was challenging, for sure, I think it helped us make sure that we had like a really good business model and operational model in place and stay in integrity with what we were trying to do.
So I kind of know this feeling when you like, you have this whole picture. We were talking about having that feeling of something being so big, you know it's something mm-hmm. bigger than yourself. And maybe in your mind, it kind of feels like this upward traction linear line. Mm-hmm. But to someone else, it feels like a big like scribble, right?
Yeah.
How did you either convince people to believe in you or like what did you do to get someone to see that linear line, that trajectory going upward? Did you, mm-hmm. was it like multiple moments or was it like one distinct thing that you had to go back to the drawing board and like maybe present?
Yeah. In terms of fundraising, you mean?
Fundraising or even just like the mission of the company, because there is such a stigma of, you know, well, women aren't interested in sports, which is like blatantly not true.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I feel like when you're a founder and you believe in your idea, like your conviction is just like so strong that it's going to be successful, even though
yeah.
all the stats are like stacked against you in terms of like how many startups succeed after 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, et cetera. But like you believe deep down, like, yeah, this is going to be huge. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that is kind of magnetic to people. And, you know, in terms of like when you're hiring a team, like people are attracted to that conviction and belief that you have in your vision. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same thing with investors too. And of course, like they want to see the data points and the traction. But we did have them that were like showing that things were going in the right direction. And I think too, like, especially in more recent years, also the industry data was going in the right direction too, just mm-hmm. in terms of the growth of women's sports and women in sports.
Right.
So it was tough in the beginning, and I think it was that vision and conviction that got the early people. And then when we had the funding to build, mm-hmm. our bet was basically right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what I do love about the Gist is, like, it's very community-based. Mm-hmm. How you said you had a lot of people that, like, believed in you, and that were those first initial subscribers. But how do you foster such a large online community like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for us, like one of the biggest things has just been having a brand that stands for something mm. and being very mission driven mm-hmm. And purpose led in the work that we're doing and really being about making sports a more equitable place and making it an inclusive place for everyone, and especially people that have been traditionally excluded from a very exclusive and male-dominated mm-hmm. sport. I think, like, if you build it for those people and not for everyone, it's specifically for the people that have been excluded,
right,
they will come and they will feel welcome and they will be engaged. And I think that has been a really big part of it. I think just, yeah, continuing to be aligned with our integrity and everything we do and all of the content that, you know, we put out mm-hmm. also I think it's just that like alignment and that commitment to the mission that in addition to it being a useful product that people are like, great, I can stay up to date with sports. It makes me laugh. Like there's utility to it. They also feel part of something bigger, a larger movement.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of the key to it.
What does purpose mean to you, whether it's personally or professionally or both?
Yeah. Good question. And for me these days, like they are kind of going together in one, which I think is kind of the sweet spot. But yeah, I think when I think about purpose these days, it's like, it almost has kind of a spiritual meaning to it. It's kind of what I think I was meant to do here.
Yeah.
And it's the way that my unique gifts and talents and what I'm naturally interested in, what I'm naturally good at, kind of meet with how I think I can have the greatest impact on the world, essentially. Yeah. So for me, I'm like so happy because it feels like my personal purpose and my professional purpose get to be one right now.
And that's how I feel about, like, when I coined the word sparkle. It's like that fire inside that, like, wakes you up in the morning. But what I think sometimes, especially, you know, as women, we start to feel guilt when our purpose changes. And so what were some of the feelings that you had when you stepped away from the gist?
Yeah. It was a lot of mixed emotions and not easy ones, a lot of them. I think there was a lot of grief because it was something that I like had put so much of myself into for so many years. And I was really attached to my identity as a founder of The Gist.
Yeah.
And like I loved the team and my co-founders. There were so many great things that I would be stepping away from that. It feels like a breakup, you know, it feels like a little death. So a lot of grief. For me, because I burned out, there also was a lot of shame and guilt around like I wasn't able to bring my best self to the table here and I was in a really low self-worth place. And so there was a lot of shame associated with taking a step away, a lot of guilt of like, I feel like I'm leaving behind my team. I feel like I'm leaving behind a perfectly amazing like mission and like situation. I think there was also some relief, because I think I knew deep down that it wasn't aligned and it wasn't my true purpose for me personally, as much as it was for many years, it felt amazing and the right place to be. Eventually, became a place where I didn't feel like I was fully expressing like my true gifts and what I'm here to do. And I can explain that a little bit. Like I was the head of operations, finance, and growth, and very much in kind of my masculine energy and left brain thinking and logical numbers oriented. But I'm a really creative person and I love working with people one-on-one, and parts of that like weren't really, you know, being expressed in my work and my scope with the company. And so, yeah, there was a little bit of relief and a little bit of hope that like maybe I can find something that is more aligned.
For the listeners that don't know what the masculine energy means, can you explain more in depth what that means?
Yeah, it's kind of that like analytical, strategic, like there are some very positive, like masculine traits, like good leadership. lots of us are more familiar with like the toxic masculine traits too. Whereas the feminine energy is more intuitive, it's more creative, it's more empathetic. And you need both to be in balance and to be successful. But our culture really overemphasizes and overglorifies the masculine traits.
Right.
You know, tells us to grind and work hard and like be a certain brand of leader. And undervalues the more feminine traits. And I realized that that's what I was doing too. I was really over leaning into my masculine. And so a lot of my journey has been coming more back into my feminine and appreciating it in a way that I didn't learn to appreciate it through my upbringing and culture.
Right. And what was your first indication of either that misalignment or chronic fatigue and burnout?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's funny. I feel like I kind of ignored it for a long time. I was so disconnected from my body mm-hmm. that even though there was like pain manifesting in my shoulder and neck and I had an eye twitch and like I clearly wasn't, you know, energetic and like happy, I think the truth of that would have been like almost too hard for me to accept that like
right.
I wasn't happy in my company. And so it took me hitting, like getting hit with like running into a brick wall, basically, of waking up one morning mm-hmm. and being like, something is like really not okay. And just like feeling just so much overwhelm and anxiety and emotional and physical exhaustion. Like I felt like I was mentally breaking down. And that's really what it took for me to be like, okay,
yeah,
something is wrong here.
Right. Was there like a key day or memory that you have where you had finally admitted it?
Yeah. Yeah. The day when I like woke up and felt all of those things was the day that I admitted it to myself. And I also admitted it to my co-founders. Mm. I kind of told them right away. Mm. And they were very understanding and compassionate, obviously. But I don't think any of us fully comprehended the full extent of burnout and like how bad it can be. And that, you know, we were brainstorming like, okay, maybe Rosin will take like a few long weekends and just keep working into her whole 2-week vacation and like that will cure her. But, and I like, that's what I thought too. But
yeah.
In reality, like when you're at the very far end of burnout, because there are different stages of burnout, mm-hmm. but at its worst, it can take months and even years to recover from it.
Right.
And so I did keep working for another 3 months and it just got worse. My work performance declined. My mental health declined. I went on my vacation hoping it would cure me and came back and it was just as bad as ever. And so that was kind of the point at which we were like, okay, Rosalind needs to go on leave.
Do you think that part of you knew, like even that day when you admitted that you had burnout, that you were going to have to leave the company, or did you have no idea?
I had no idea, and I was very against leaving the company, even though, like, deep down, as I would find out over time, like, there was some, like, inner knowing of this is not right, but I was, like, so attached to my identity of, like, working in that company that right. I did not want to go.
Yeah.
And it took a lot longer for me to finally come to terms with that reality.
What was your perception of the word burnout or like your relationship with it before you actually admitted it?
I didn't understand the full extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it's a word that sometimes gets thrown around in our culture.
Yeah.
Sometimes people use it interchangeably with like, I'm feeling stressed or like I've been working really hard for like, you know, a couple of months. And sometimes all those things do go together for sure. But I didn't have a full appreciation of how like absolutely devastating it could feel.
I personally hate the word burnout.
Uh-huh.
I think it started, and I think it's used specifically against women a lot, and young, ambitious women, right? Because I sometimes think it's the narrative around it is like you brought it on yourself, like oh, mm-hmm. like you work too hard or like you put too much on your plate, and it's like I always say like you're. Biggest strength is also your biggest weakness. So like I'm a very, very passionate person. And so sometimes I'll get so laser focused on something, but it's not coming from a place of like, it's coming from a place of love. Like when I pursue something and then the warning is like, oh, like don't burn out or like it, in some ways, and maybe this is just my experience, but like it's been a way of like manipulating, mm-hmm. right? Like so that I wouldn't go after certain things and like it, as it relates to sports specifically.
Mm.
So I always felt, well, let me just show you, mm-hmm. which in some ways leads to a burnout, but it's not like if we're using sport as an analogy, like it wasn't necessarily the physical act of running for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the sport, the cross country and track. But And sometimes it's not even like the writing, it's actually these larger societal systems or stigmas that kind of contribute to this chronic burnout. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you felt that way with, like, you know, what you were doing with The Gist was innovative at the time, and it still is in a lot of ways. Do you ever feel like that played a role in your burnout, or do you think it was actually the logistics of the operations of building a company?
You know, I think that there were a lot of factors that led to it, mm-hmm. Both external and internal. Mm-hmm. I think on the external side, being in a high growth startup environment and the effort to bring something into the world that wasn't there before and mm-hmm. have it succeed, mm-hmm. it takes a lot out of the founders, the team, everybody involved.
Yeah.
And it requires a lot of personal and professional growth to go from a three-person company to a 20-person company in 5 years. But then, and for me too, there was the whole scope thing. But then on the internal side, there was a lot going on a deeper level. Mm. I was in many ways being driven by a lot of core wounds and this need to prove myself mm-hmm. In the world. And so I was a perfectionist in mm-hmm. my work in all different areas of my life. I was a people pleaser. Mm. I was trying to keep everybody happy with me at all times. I had a hard time setting boundaries and saying no. I would overwork. I had a hard time asking for help. I was trying to be super independent, all as a way of getting this external validation that I was capable and I was a good manager and good leader and all these things that I thought I needed to be accepted in the world and to be loved and right. respected and admired. And so all of that was like driven by limiting beliefs, social conditioning, core wounds that were yet to be healed. Mm-hmm. So it's funny when you, it's interesting when you said like, people say burnout is your fault, and it's like, it's not, because a lot of those things contribute to burnout, and it's just like where you are
right.
on your healing journey.
Right.
So it's like not your fault if you're someone who's more prone to those behaviors. It just means you have some stuff to heal, and that's okay. And sometimes it takes getting rocked in the way that I did for you to wake up and be like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to live my life in a way that is more driven by my soul and my purpose and less by my wounds and, you know, trying to prove myself.
I think it also probably goes back to also being like wanting and being ready to heal. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not, then it's just going to be that like endless cycle.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people mm-hmm. don't want to heal. A lot of people want to feel like they're in this constant state of burnout because it makes them like the hard work or whatever makes them feel valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't be surviving. It should be like living.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people forget what that means. Now, your work with Within as a founder and executive coach, do you ever feel like this burnout is kind of inevitable for like creatives and founders? Or is that like what your work is now, is pushing against that?
Yeah. I think that's like the narrative that we're told is mm-hmm. that like you have to build a company in a certain way and you have to hustle and you have to grind and like that's the key to success.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually there's a different way of building companies that allows you to lean into what you do best, because I think a lot of the time burnout comes from a misalignment mm-hmm. between like what you're meant to be doing and what you are doing, which is probably why like you can do what you're doing without necessarily burning out.
Right.
I think it's when you're grinding on the stuff that is not feeding your soul and giving you energy that you burn out. And so I think if you're working on the right things that mean things to you, and you're doing the work of unblocking limiting beliefs and just like getting out of your own way, and you're having respect for your nervous system mm-hmm. and resourcing it, and instead of saying, like, the more hours I put into my company, the more success I'll have, instead being like, what are the most important things that I need to do? And how do I resource myself in order to be able to level up as a leader and grow with my company mm-hmm. by resting, by having hobbies, by being in nature, by spending time with people that I love and that I can be my authentic self with, by, you know, whatever it is that like gives right. you energy, and prioritizing that balance instead of just like grinding for the sake of grinding and putting in the hours, because that's what our culture says is successful.
Guys, if you don't actually follow Rosalind's content already, you need to, because the way you went in depth in this with even like your visual with it of how to delegate tasks that, what you called it, zone of genius, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you go into what that means actually?
Yeah, sure. So this is based off of Gay Hendricks's work. And if you want to go deeper into it, his book, The Big Leap, is where I got this from. Mm-hmm. But everybody has a zone of genius, and then they have a zone of excellence, competence, and incompetence. And as much as you can, you want to be working in your zone of genius, which is mm-hmm. the things that you're naturally interested in doing, that you love to do, that you're naturally good at doing. They're often things that we take for granted because mm-hmm. they just come so naturally to us. But it's like the things that we love to do so much that we can spend 10,000 hours getting good at them because we love to do it so much and like become an expert in it. That's right. our zone of genius. Zone of excellence is a dangerous one because it's the stuff that we've gotten good at doing over time, and that people like it when we do that work, but we don't actually love it enough mm. to like do it forever.
Right.
So like for me, that could have been, you know, like finance and operations and growth, whereas the zone of genius is like coaching. Mm. And then you have competence, which is like you're good at it, but you know, probably other people should be doing it, in your zone of incompetence, which is like you're not good at it. And in your business, you want to be leaning into your zone of genius stuff, because that's usually what either allows you and your business to be making more money and for you to have more energy to put into other areas of your business. Mm-hmm. And that just like gives you your edge. It's your special sauce. And you want to look at everything else and find a way to delegate, automate, minimize, eliminate, mm-hmm. Outsource, so that you're not getting drained by those tasks and thus not able to give all your energy to your zone of genius.
What if you don't know your zone of genius? How do you identify it?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I have some ideas for reflecting on it. One good question is like, what are the things you're doing when you get caught in a state of flow, mm-hmm. when you just like lose track of time and you're like, oh, I didn't realize 3 hours went by because I was doing this thing. For me, that like randomly like design work was that for me at the Gist. Like I loved doing the branding and like doing stuff in Canva, even though that was like not my role at all.
Yeah.
So
Canva's addicting.
Yeah, exactly. For some people, but not everybody. We all have different zones.
Some people are like, this is the hardest thing ever. I'm like, no, it's Photoshop for dummies.
Exactly. Also reflecting on like what you love to do as a kid. And it's not always like the exact activity, but it can be an indication. So like I used to really like making up dances and like performing them for like you know, family, people. And that doesn't mean I should be a dancer at all. I'm not a good dancer, but there's a part of me that likes to share my story more broadly, like what I'm doing now. So, you know, that's an indication of zone of genius. Also like thinking about what people come to you for help on, like what do they ask advice for you on, what do they come to do, like what do you get really positive feedback on, mm-hmm. And yeah, just like what is energizing. You can also do a time audit where you just like track all your activities every half hour for a week and then just go back and see what's energy giving and what's energy draining, and you'll start to see some patterns there. Mm. So lots of different ways to start looking into it.
How did you get started like discovering all these tools that you're now teaching, you know, some of your clients?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly, they've all been tools that I have used on myself in my healing journey.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why it works when somebody resonates with my story and burnout and like what I went through. They're often like good fit for coaching because all the tools that help me heal are probably, lots of them will probably be helpful for them too.
Do you think there is a connection between like the mind, body, and spirit as it relates to a healing journey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think that when the mind, body, and spirit are in integrity, mm-hmm. That's kind of where you want to be. For me, when I was burnt out. Like, I was so disconnected from my body, which holds so much wisdom and intuition. Like, if you learn how to listen to your body, usually it knows best about everything before your mind does.
Yep.
As it relates to the spirit, for me, this is like your soul, and it's like, it's also like your essential self. It's like your true self that like knows from deep down what it is meant for it. Martha Beck teaches this concept of the essential self and the social self. The essential self is like what you're born with, and that unique blueprint for like what you're going to do in this world, what you're meant for. And then your social self is like the self that gets social conditioned, and you know, your parents and your teachers and social media all influence the social self.
Interesting.
And so leaning back into the essential self, like that journey back into, you know, who you truly are, your soul, I think holds a lot of potential, I think, for finding more meaning and joy. Anyways, that was a little bit of a tangent on on the question. But ultimately, when they're all working together, I think that's where you want to be.
What was the most profound, like, exercise or thing or person that influenced you to find that essential self?
Yeah. I think it was Martha Beck, actually. So who I just quoted her work. She wrote a book called The Way of Integrity. And I read it like about 3 or 4 months after I had gone on leave.
Mm.
And I think it's really what inspired me to do the work to like understand my social self and get back to my essential self and like truly embody the belief that me acting from this place of my, or like honoring this essential self and my unique purpose and everything is what would allow me to be the most successful.
Mm-hmm.
And she also is like a pioneer of life coaching. And so I signed up for her coaching certification after reading the book, 'cause I was like, I just really believe in her teachings, and I've been doing that for eight months and just graduated from it. So yeah, the book just totally changed the trajectory of like the last year for me and played a significant role in me becoming a coach.
So when you started coaching to heal your burnout, did you know that your next venture was going to be a coaching business?
I didn't know anything for sure, but I think there's something interesting about the period of grief and when your entire world is falling apart and like you're just at a rock bottom, is that it's like a place where I think it's easier to get like pings from, you know, your essential self.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I did get some like pings that like coaching would make sense for me. Like, I was very obsessed with personal development.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm ready to heal. And I also think that like the struggles that we go through are often what are meant to be a part of our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all just kind of made sense fitting together that I would like help people going through what I went through that modality that like lights me up so much.
Mm-hmm. What has been the most interesting thing that you found in other people's stories as it relates to their burnout and their healing?
I think what's interesting is that everyone's story is different in how it manifests and plays out and what it looks like in terms of their burnout.
Mm-hmm.
But at the core, I think it's still kind of like the same issue, which is that misalignment between like your life and how you're showing up in the world versus what's actually meant for you.
Yeah. And then I guess, can you go into like the actual feeling when you were able to get, because I'm assuming like when you were at the gist, it felt aligned in that period of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But what that shift was like when you found this new alignment within.
Mm-hmm.
What is, so people know kind of from your story that they're on the right path. Because I think sometimes, especially when you're kind of this in-between phase, and you truly have no idea, and maybe the odds or like the facts are looking like you don't know what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's finances, whether it's people's perceptions. But how do you stay grounded in knowing what you're doing matters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. When I think about the difference between like when I was at the Gist, especially as I was burning out,
mm-hmm.
I was just like really disconnected from myself, even though I was like, in my mind, I was like, what I'm doing is important and I think this is what I want to continue doing. I'm very dedicated to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel good, like, in my body.
Mm.
Whereas as I've been on this path with within, it's almost like kind of like a resonance in my body. Like, when I would ask it, like, what about coaching and what about writing and like starting to share more. excuse me. Oh my God. Sorry. I just choked on my spit.
You're fine. You okay?
Yeah. One sec.
I hate when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Not the best time.
It's okay.
Okay, what was I saying? I think there was just like this resonance in my body. Like, it feels like light and expansive, mm-hmm. and like lit up. And I think if you can stay in it and trust that enough, you can figure out the other things. Like, I think a lot of the things that hold you back from really listening to like what is meant for you and what your body is saying is meant for you, a lot of the time they're limiting beliefs actually, yeah. that can be worked through. And usually, like, if that's like, if this is your destiny, like, there are different ways, like there are different strategies and different paths of, mm-hmm. like figuring it out, even if it's not like you're going straight to the end vision of like you doing this thing.
Yeah.
I think that there are ways to just start pivoting towards it,
mm-hmm.
and taking steps that you can do kind of in the meantime.
It's so funny because like that lit up feeling is sparkle, right? Mm-hmm. But I think so many times we are our own worst enemy and we talk ourselves out of that,
mm-hmm.
that light. And we, like, kind of create this own darkness, which is limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. like you said. What are some tools to unlearn that and, like, not kind of... Because, like, sometimes, no matter what you pursue, it's going to feel like work. It's going to feel, mm-hmm. hard. But maintaining that kind of flame, I think, is really important. But sometimes people convince themselves to shut it off and, you know, they just get in a cycle. And I can never really imagine completely shutting it off, but I know I have self-limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. and sometimes I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think when it comes to limiting beliefs themselves, there are different tools for working through them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to, like a coach or just like a third party that can point out the things that like you think are reality, but they're just like, dude, like that's not reality. That's in your brain. That's just like you trapping yourself in your own brain. So right. like a coach or even just like a friend that can help point it out is helpful. I think journaling is really good for it too. And just getting into the practice of like writing down what is like the limiting belief that is holding you back, or like what is the, mm-hmm. thought that's maybe holding you back, and just looking for ways to disprove it.
Mm-hmm.
And like asking powerful questions of like, where did this thought come from? Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, like some of our limiting beliefs come from our parents, for instance, yeah. or from, you know, other aspects of our upbringing or culture. And then finding evidence to prove it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, if my limiting belief was like, you know, I really think part of my what I'm supposed to be doing, the mission of within, is telling my story on a larger stage. But my limiting belief is like, I'm not a good public speaker. which has been a limiting belief for me
right.
for a long time. Like,
I think you're a great public speaker.
Thank you. I've been working on it. I've been like pushing myself through limiting beliefs and actually going to Toastmasters to
awesome.
Keep practicing, you know, cool. getting over the fear. But yeah, if I wanted to do some work around that limiting belief of I'm not a good public speaker, it's like, okay, what's the evidence to the contrary? And it's like, right. well, I've done it before. And, you know, I've gotten good feedback from it. Like right now, like if I was having that limiting belief now, I'd be like, Davey told me I was a really good public speaker.
Yeah.
You know, just finding like examples to say that's like, that's not true. And so I'm not going to let that limiting belief hold me back from this, like something that I think is important to what I want to put out in the world.
Ironically, I have the same limiting belief. I get nervous all the time for these things. And it's one of those things that I know I fall in the middle of, I'm able to do it. So that's why I'm like, well, I must do it because mm-hmm. there's people who can't. And what I care more about than like obviously being afraid is like people's stories not being heard. Mm. And so that's why I'm like, all right, let's power through. I'll eventually get over it. But it's like, I don't know. It's still... You have to at some point take off that prescription that you put on yourself, because if you're doing it, then how is it true?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe yeah. I just answered my own like
yeah.
fear. Look what you did. See, she's a great coach, guys. So as it relates to a burnout and what you're doing now, what does the definition of working hard mean to you? And maybe it's changed from back then when you were at the Gist to right now.
Yeah. Yeah. My relationship with hard work is very different. I think I felt very motivated to make sure I was building this new business in a way that wouldn't burn me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one aspect of it is, like we talked about before, leaning into the zone of genius and what I do best. And so even if I am working harder, like more hours, it's taking more energy. Well, it's not taking more energy because it's actually energy giving. Mm-hmm. It's more sustainable for me because it's not like grinding away at something that is soul draining.
Mm.
I also have been looking at hard work not as like how many hours I'm putting in, but like really looking at the equation between like rest and like resourcing your nervous system to allow me to thrive in the moments, you know, where I need the energy.
Right.
And there are lots of moments like that when you're launching a new business, like mm-hmm. sales calls, stuff like this, when I'm scared of public speaking, you know, yeah. like they require something of me and my nervous system. And so it's like, how can I balance that with resting or watching TV or reading or doing like lighter work or yeah. getting a good sleep in order to shine for the moments that really matter instead of just working all morning because I'm like,
yeah.
I should be working. And then the other thing too is getting really strategic about what, when you are working, like what you're working on, instead of being reactive to the emails or the Slacks or whatever, like really being intentional at the beginning of the quarter and the month and the week of like, what is the number one thing that I need to be working on in my business and pushing ahead, and using the first 2 hours of every morning to be pushing ahead that goal so that if I'm tired or if, you know, I can only work a few more hours in the day, the thing that needed to get done got done.
Right. Because like 4 hours of really incredible productive work with a bunch of rest that fueled you to do those 4 hours is more valuable than 8 hours where you're like getting up every half hour and like dragging your feet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which I think sometimes like the 9-to-5 culture has perpetrated that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like some people don't actually work their best from 9-to-5.
Nope.
And I love what you said about like kind of, it's almost like shifting your perspective on like what work really is. Like if we could reframe that sometimes work is watching our favorite TV show and that makes us shine, like that's really powerful.
Yeah.
it's like, because I mean, even there's this book, The Creative Way, that people talk about. And even Issa Rae talks about this, of like the kind of rest that she needs to generate her most like creative soul and creative work. And it is, it's kind of these external perceptions that dim our light. And I'm so happy to have you here speaking about alignment and what we can achieve from our power within, no pun intended, but to actually keep shining sustainably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to share about your mission and the future?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, Within, it's a personal development platform for founders, offering coaching, content, and community. And really, the focus is at the intersection of entrepreneurship, personal development, and spirituality, because I do believe that entrepreneurship is a very spiritual journey and an opportunity. It's an opportunity to grow and heal and learn. And I just, you know, want to honor that through my work and support people on their journey that are willing to do that inner work alongside the external work that it takes to build companies and lives of meaning.
Yeah. No, well, thank you so much for joining the Sparkle Show. Your ethos really aligns with everything that Sparkle is about, your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And that is a journey, and it ebbs and flows. So thank you on and sparkle on.
Thank you. Sparkle on too.